It's holiday season, and even in Antarctica, they're celebrating Christmas. Fenn Montaigne, author of Fraser's Penguins, was at Palmer Station for Christmas. Fenn, what's it like in a scientific station in Antarctica for Christmas? What do you do down there on Christmas?
Well, they celebrate Christmas just like we do up here in the U.S. The nice thing about being in Antarctica is you always have a white Christmas. Another nice thing that I loved is that it was light about 22 hours a day, which meant the celebration could go on and on. But the station has 40 people. It's supplied by boat alone. We had turkeys, we had stuffing, we had wine, and I and a group of about 10 or 12 other people at the station practiced for weeks to sing Christmas carols. So we had some caroling. And as at most Antarctic stations, after the feast, there was partying and imbibing well into the day after Christmas.
What would you guess is the population of Antarctica at Christmas time?
It's certainly probably, given that's the peak of the whole research season, maybe 10,000 perhaps across a whole continent that's 1.5 times the size of the U.S., including Alaska. The biggest station is the U.S.'s station in McMurdo Sound. The Brits have some big stations, so do the New Zealanders, the Russians, the Australians. So it's a population of some thousands of researchers and support staff spread over an enormous territory.
And that's peak season when you've got like daylight almost all the time. I suppose the dead of winter would be, what, July and August, where the population
July and August, and then you're really talking about hundreds. Many of the stations are abandoned in winter, and you've primarily got the stations at the South Pole, the Scott Amundsen station that the U.S. Occupies. So it's literally down into the hundreds in the Antarctic winter.
And when New Year's rolls around, how do you know what time is actually midnight?
Well, the station goes by U.S. time. And at least I think it does. I've got to remember, it's close to U.S. East Coast time. They also are very close to the time of the southern tip of South America in Tierra del Fuego with Chile and Argentina, which is within an hour or two of U.S. East Coast time. So it's very clear when the New Year is rung in. And again, one of the real treats, I forgot to add, of the Antarctic Christmas and New Year's is that you can enjoy your bourbon or your scotch or your gin over glacial ice that is thousands, tens of thousands of years old. It's this beautiful, clear ice that we go out, we pick it up in boats, bring it back to the station, and chop it up. And I don't think I've ever had a more tasty sip of bourbon than the one I had over Antarctic glacial ice.
One of the hidden joys of the holiday seasons in Antarctica. Fenn Montaigne, author of Fraser's Penguins, thanks for checking in with us this holiday season.
It was my pleasure, and happy holidays to you.
You don't have to go to the ends of the earth to have an unusual Christmas. Tell us about the out-of-the-ordinary holidays you've had overseas. What made it special? We're at 877-333-7425. And you can post your travel reports to our online feedback forum. It's in the radio section of ricksteves.com. Melanie's on the line in Centerville, Utah. Melanie, thanks for your call.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. Now, you celebrated Christmas in Mexico?
Yes. A couple of years ago, my parents decided to do a service project. So that was our Christmas present. We went to Mexico, and we went to a village and built a school.
Wait a minute. Your present was your parents gave you a trip to go to Mexico and work?
Yeah. I know. but we loved it because it was really
Kidding. That's a great idea. Yes. Okay. So, and then what happened?
Well, we actually, my dad thought ahead, and so we left a couple days early before the group that we were meeting went down there. And so we spent a couple days in Mexico City, an actual Christmas day in Mexico City, and we got to drive around the square and see all the Christmas decorations that they had and the celebrations. It was really
So how do they celebrate amazing. Christmas in Mexico City?
They have decorations everywhere and everybody goes to mass.
Does it feel like a religious festival or a New Year's Eve kind of festival?
Christmas Day was definitely more religious. There was a lot less street partying going on because we were in the village the week between Christmas and New Year's, and we actually got to go to a New Year's party as well.
Okay, and how was that?
Oh, that was amazing. They had an ABBA cover band, which was hysterical.
In Spanish?
Yes.
Singing ABBA songs in Spanish?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
And English.
And English, right.
And then we had the grapes in the cup that each one, we had to make a wish when we ate each one. And they had seeds and none of us knew it, and that was funny.
Now, wait, tell us about the grapes. At midnight, you eat the grapes, or what's the deal?
Yeah, and I think there's 12 grapes. If I remember correctly, there's 12 grapes, and each one represents a month. And so you're supposed to make a wish on each one as you eat them as the clock strikes.
Oh, with the 12, striking 12 at the top of the hour. Okay.
Exactly, yes.
And you had a mouthful of seeds.
Yeah, all of us.
So
like,
your wish
was
to survive into the new year with a mouthful of seeds, probably.
Something like that. And they had these giant puppets that were papier-mâché masks with long streamers, and they were carrying them around the crowd who was dancing to this Spanish ABBA music, and it was a lot of fun.
Now, you were going with a church group down to Mexico.
It was actually not a church group, but it was a humanitarian group. It's called Choice Humanitarian, but there's lots that people could do.
And you were actually going down to do some work. What kind of work did you do?
We built a school, but we stayed in tents in the village. And then during the day, we would work on the school, but then we'd also go to individual families, and we learned how to make cheese, and we learned how to make tortillas, and wash our clothes on a rock, and
wow.
Husk the corn, and all that stuff. So it was really great.
So your parents gave you this experience for Christmas.
Yeah, and none of us have forgotten it.
You know, I can't remember other gifts that I got for this Christmas or that Christmas over the past, but you'd certainly remember that gift for the rest of your life.
Oh, absolutely. And we all still talk about it and share experiences. And that was literally our present. We didn't get any presents for Christmas Day, and that was a little strange. But at the end of it, we wouldn't have traded it for any presents.
That's a beautiful story. And celebrating Christmas in a different culture in Mexico. Tell me more about how that felt.
Well, we're really family-oriented anyway, so we kind of, it was really nice to be there with our family. It was my immediate family, and it's a beautiful time of year, and for us, we're also religious, and since it's a religious holiday there, and then just to be in a different culture, it brought us closer to the world in that sense, I suppose.
Did you get a sense, of course there's commercialism for Christmas south of the border as well, but what sort of a sense did you get in Mexico about the family and the traditional aspect of Christmas, and what kind of relative richness might there be there?
I think it was much more family-oriented, perhaps. There wasn't as much of the gaudy Christmas decorations that we might have here. It was all... There were nativities, and they were beautiful, but they were also quite simple in our terms.
Mm-hmm.
And they were everywhere, but it was, I don't know, I would say more simple, but also more loving.
Now, my experience is you have that simplicity and that nice sort of loving intimacy, but you also have dangerous firecrackers.
Well, that's true. Actually, the last day in the village, they threw a little fiesta for us, which was a lot of fun. But they had a giant piñata, and they had boys, teenage boys, on the top of buildings, the school building and a church building, and they were holding the ropes that were swinging the piñata, and there were kids with this giant steel bar swinging at the piñata, and the second it would crack and candy would fall out, kids would go running in, and all of the Americans, of course, were, you know, oh, my goodness, stop them, stop them. But the Mexicans, their attitude was, well, if they get hurt, they learn.
Well, I guess so. Melanie from Utah, thank you for sharing a little bit of your experience with your family south of the border.
Thank you so much.
Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you.
And Dale's on the line in Big Rapids, Michigan. Dale, thanks for your call.
Hi, well, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, tell us about your Christmas away from home.
Well, it was actually between semester breaks, and the first thing, I guess, is either number one, I was going to go skiing, but maybe the number two thing, I had heard so much about the Chris Kindle markets, and I did go to the Nuremberg market, but I think the one that really struck me the most as being the one I liked the best was my first night in Duisburg, Germany.
This is interesting because, of course, people go to Germany for those Christkindl markets, the Christmas markets, and Nuremberg is famous for what most people say has the best Christmas market. You saw them both, and you enjoyed Würzburg more. Tell us why.
Well, I think just because it was just smaller. I had gotten to Nuremberg before the crowds got there, and about noon, everybody was there, and it was literally shoulder-to-shoulder people.
In Nuremberg?
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah,
and
it's Würzburg a big deal.
Was much smaller. I think also the reason why I like Würzburg, right when I arrived, being a music teacher, I ran into this little impromptu concert of a brass ensemble. Of course, I enjoyed that tremendously. And then the smells of the nuts roasting, the Glühwein, it was just fantastic in Würzburg. That evening, I went back. I happened across a church. I don't remember the name of it, but there was a little brass ensemble performing there, too. And they were doing some Bach. And knowing the importance of Bach chorales, I heard this little, she was a really old lady, and she was singing the tune. And most of these Bach chorales are based upon tunes that everybody knows. And so after the concert, I walked up to her, and I told her in my best German, or what I thought was German, she sang very, very well. And I'll never forget, she looked at me, and she said, "I?" And so I'll never forget that.
I? Like me sing very well?
Yes, exactly, sir.
Now, Dale, when you were in Nuremberg or Würzburg, did you ever run across the actual Christkind?
No, I did not.
And do you know the story about the Christkind?
I don't think I do.
This Christkind market, the whole idea is way back in the Reformation times, Martin Luther in Germany thought they wanted to take the gift-giving focus away from St. Nick. And in good Protestant style, he said, let's focus it on the baby Jesus. But the way I understand it, the little kids in Germany couldn't get their brains around baby Jesus giving gifts. So that sort of gift-giving person morphed from baby Jesus into an angel, and it became a female angel. And today, there's a girl in Nuremberg that's sort of crowned every couple of years as the Christkind, the Christ child, but it's always a teenage girl. And she just is very angelic, and the children are just mesmerized by the sight of her. And she's like a rock star holiday time and goes
really
around the town. And I remember I was there at Nuremberg, and we went to a gathering where all the kids were together, and she sort of held court. And I'll never forget, she said, "If you're very gentle, you can touch my wings." And the kids went crazy. Tell me more about your food memories of your Christmas in Germany. You've got the Glühwein, you got the chestnuts roasting, you got the gingerbread, you got these beautiful sausages. What do you remember?
Those are things that I certainly remember. I was reading my journal this morning, and at Nuremberg I had all of that. And one thing that really comes to mind, I didn't see it in the Christmas markets, but my last stop was at Rothenburg, and I discovered the Schneeball.
Oh, the Schneeball. Now, did you like the Schneeball?
I absolutely loved it.
It's sort of a leftover dough ball they put together, and it's like a big round donut, isn't it?
So. Right. It kind of reminds me of what my mother would do with leftover pie dough, but they just kept rolling it up into a ball. And I had eaten so many, I thought I was going to become one.
Oh, right. Rothenburg. Well, that's quite a popular thing, but my favorite memory is those little tiny sausages. They're about the size of your little finger. And they bring them out, especially at Christmas time. They've got these outdoor stands that sell them three little sausages in a beautiful bun with great German mustard. I love it.
Well, Dale, I certainly ate my way through the Christmas markets.
Dale, did you ever go skiing then on your trip?
Yes. I ended up in Steuben, and I can't remember the name of the hotel, but it was about $50, $60 a night. It included that, and it included three meals a day, and then the evening meal was like a four- or five-course gourmet meal.
Really?
It was just fantastic.
Now, Steuben is in Austria, isn't it? That's a little less expensive than Germany. And was that then your base for, did you just rent some skis there and enjoy skiing?
Yes, I rented some skis. It was just around the corner. I had done a lot of research before I went, and this is my second trip to Europe, and I had read that it was going to be easy to rent skis, and it actually was. It really, really was, and I'd love to go back because that mountain really, really did me, and that was kind of in the early stages of my skiing career. So I really want to go back and tackle that mountain again.
All right, Dale in Big Rapids, Michigan, thanks for your call.
Thank you so much, Rick.
Merry Christmas. Bye.
Merry Christmas to you.
And Chuck's on the line in Spring Hill, Florida. Chuck, thanks for your call.
Hi, Mr. Rick Steves.
And how are you doing this holiday season?
Doing wonderfully.
Tell me about how you enjoy your European experiences with Christmas.
Well, my Aunt Ava, who lives in Passau, Austria/Germany, it's right there on the border, and we spent a Christmas evening with her, and she had a very unique evening planned with her. We had a little dinner just before Mass, and before going to church, we stopped by the family cemetery, and I was surprised at how many people were in the cemetery. And what they were doing was this. I'm actually looking at a picture that I took as we were there, and all the gravestones have little red candles that are lit, and there are pictures of the family members, along with the family members now. They're just kind of just remembering or having a little Christmas Eve celebration, remembering family in past Christmases.
So the dearly departed are still there with the Christmas celebration in Passau, Bavaria.
That's correct. And I was just amazed at how many people were there. And then as we were leaving, I say to my Aunt Ava, I said, "Don't you worry about vandalism or something like that?" And her look was like horrified, like, "Oh, no." She said, the family and the vandals would be shunned.
You mean if somebody vandalized the tombs with the photographs and the candles?
Exactly.
Right.
And it was as if a very small village. It was only maybe two or three.
You know, I had a similar experience, Chuck, in Norway. And all my life, I've never seen candles at Christmas in graveyards. But in Scandinavia, apparently they do the same thing. They'll light candles to remember their, departed relatives and loved ones. And they bring them all together at the church in the village each Christmas Eve.
And it's absolutely beautiful, too, because some of them are singing.
Yeah.
Of course, in their Austrian, Germany, Deutsche tongue. And it was hard to pick it up because it's kind of like in America. You have the southern twang and you have the northern and western. And I was trying to pick up from it from my Austrian of the little I have. And it was just unbelievable that it was just bunches of families. Mm-hmm. And the other neat thing was we all streamed to church. We were all going together to church for midnight Mass.
And Passau is famous for the size of its church organ, its incredible organ.
Exactly. I believe it's the largest church organ in the world.
If you're an organ enthusiast, it's worth checking out Passau on the Danube, sort of between Munich and Vienna. It's just a gorgeous city where two rivers come together, where the Inns and the Danube River come together, right on the peninsula there, Passau, P-A-S-S-A-U, and a delightful time any time of year.
Absolutely, but Christmas time is absolutely magical.
All right, Chuck, Gruskot to you this Christmas time.
And to you, too.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
We wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas, we wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year. Good tidings we bring to you and your kin. We wish you a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Travel with Rick Steves is produced at Europe Through the Back Door in Edmonds, Washington by Tim Tatton.
With Sarah McCormick.
And Isaac Kaplan-Woolner.
We get technical help from Jonathan Lee, Andrew Wakeling, and Kate Mulhern-Graham. And our theme music is by Jerry Frank.
Thanks to the Radio Foundation in New York for their help this week.
You can listen again in the radio section of ricksteves.com.
We wish you a peaceful and happy holiday season from all of us at Travel with Rick Steves.
All the best, big man, for Glasgow. Have a happy Christmas.